This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Podcasts are sweeping the earbuds of the nation, where people channel their passions into thoughtful, funny, or informative pieces of audio for specific or more broad audiences. Today, we revisit a talk with the creators of a few of the more successful locally produced podcasts out on the web. But first, in spite of being classified as opportunistic carnivores and raptors, eagles hold a soft spot in the hearts of many Americans. And here in Florida, there are 1,400 nesting pairs. 25 years ago, the Audubon of Florida started its Eagle Watch program, where citizen scientists can get involved in collecting data and other observable information on these eagles. It's grown from 22 volunteers to cover more than 27 counties, with hundreds of eyes now trained on Florida's nesting eagles. Here to tell us more about the program and about a volunteer training event planned for this Thursday in Fort Myers is Shawn Lee Breeding. She's the coordinator of the Eagle Watch program. Shawn Lee, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
We are talking about the Audubon Florida's Eagle Watch program with its director. Do you have a question for our eagle expert? Do you enjoy watching these majestic birds? Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCO. So first, Shawn Lee, tell me a little bit about the Eagle Watch program. It's described as citizen science. How much of a scientist do people need to be?
Well, that's the beauty of the word citizen science. It's regular people like you and I who have a 9-to-5 job but want to help animals or wild places and be involved in conservation, and we partner with scientists. So citizen scientists, you don't have to be a scientist. You just have to be concerned and have some spare time. You go out on your weekend or, you know, your time off and just go out and be involved in counting whatever the data might be and collecting that and sharing that with scientists who can then do all of the statistics and the number crunching. So it's a great way for people to get involved, and it's an idea that's been around for, you know, 100 years or more. It started really with the Christmas bird count back in 1900. So it's a long-running tradition and something we're super excited to have involved with Audubon.
The Christmas bird count, is that the one that became the big year, the people trying to get as many birds as they can throughout the course of a year?
I think it's a similar idea, but the Christmas bird count really started, you know, back in the day. People used to go out and hunt birds just as a contest, and so there was a Christmas tradition to go out and hunt and shoot as many birds as you could. And in the 1900s, a gentleman said, why don't we count the birds instead of shoot them? And this kind of turned into a large-scale gathering of people around North America who go out and count birds during the Christmas period.
And then it's just evolved from there, right?
Yeah, super critical.
So this one's just eagles. What kind of training do these volunteers go through?
Well, they, you know, hopefully they get to come to one of our volunteer trainings like we're holding in Fort Myers. I do travel around the state at this time to host trainings in various counties. And it's basically just some background on eagle biology, some of the expectations about the program and what's involved, some of the regulations that protect the eagles, so they're aware of those. They really are our eyes out there helping us, you know, catch the incidences of disturbance near eagle nests or other things that are going on, and they help us protect the nests. So it's critical that they understand what some of those protections are.
So, yeah, how many volunteers do you have total now?
We actually have just over 200 volunteers that are active around the state, and we're currently active in 39 counties. I know you said 27. I think that's our old statistic we need to update on the web. But we're up to 39 counties now. Last year we visited over 500 nests, and that's about 30% of the known nesting population in Florida.
Yeah, but there are 65 counties. What counties are not really getting a lot of coverage? Are they less populated counties?
It's a large swatch of counties up in the Panhandle, unfortunately. We have very little coverage up there. And then just a few sporadic counties here and there in the Central Florida area that don't have great coverage. And that's one of the reasons I'm going to Southwest Florida. We do have volunteers down there, but there are a lot of nests in that area and just not as much coverage. For Lee County, for example, there are about 56 active nests that we know about, but only 17 of them are being monitored by Eagle Watch. And some of that is because some of them are in areas that people can't get to. They might be on private property, et cetera. But we just want to make sure if it's an accessible nest that we are making every effort to monitor it.
So why is it important to keep an eye on the eagles in their nesting? Is it because of concerns about people encroaching on them or dangers to them or just to collect data?
Well, it's all of the above, really. You know, it wasn't too long ago, those of us who are old enough remember when the bald eagle was on the threatened and endangered species list, and we were in danger of losing them forever. But, you know, thanks to protections and monitoring efforts, they have made a comeback, and they were removed from that list in 2007, which is great, but none of us wants to see them go back on that list. And the key to keeping them off the endangered list, of course, is knowing how the population is doing and what threats they might be facing, how we can mitigate those threats. And that's really where Eagle Watch comes in. It helps assess how the population is doing by tracking how many chicks are hatching, how many survive to fledge or leave the nest, and then what are some of those threats they're dealing with, and how are they adapting to some of the, you know, ongoing development in our state.
So as an observer, when you're, you know, when you're a volunteer and you see a nest, it's usually pretty high. You can't see into it. So you can't really tell how many eggs are there. I guess you kind of wait and see how many hatch?
Yeah, that is the difficult part about observing eagle nests. Like you mentioned, they do prefer really tall trees. Their nests are far, you know, high up, and we do ask eagle watchers to keep the specified distance. Typically, it's about 100 yards away from a nest to not disturb the eagles while you're watching. But, yeah, generally, just by behavior, people who watch the nest can tell, you know, when they're doing a feeding behavior, even though the chicks are still young, you might not be able to see them over the rim of the nest. You can observe the parents' behavior and gather that they might be feeding young. But it's not until the chicks get to a couple of weeks of age when they're actually large enough to usually be visible over the rim of the nest that you can confirm their presence, and then they'll continue to grow from there. They grow quite rapidly, and by the time they leave the nest, they are actually the same size as the adult, although they are all completely brown. It takes them about 5 years to get that white head and tail.
Yeah, that's interesting. It takes them 5 years to do that. How long does an eagle usually live? Do they have an average lifespan?
Well, the average they say is probably in the 20s, but the oldest eagle in the wild that is known was 38 when it died, and they know that because it was banded as a young chick in the nest in its hatch year, and then years later it was struck by a car up in the northeast, I forget what state, and when they recovered it, it had a band on its leg, and they traced that back and were able to determine he was 38. So that is the oldest known wild eagle, and of course animals in captivity or captive settings often live longer. So I think the oldest known bald eagle in a zoo was around 50.
Ooh, 50. That's getting up there.
So they are pretty long. You know, they're a large bird. They're pretty long-lived, and it does take them a while to reach sexual maturity when they're ready to breed, and that's typically when they get their white head and tail, about 5 years.
Yeah. So when you were talking about being able to see whether an eagle is behaving in a way that would indicate that they have a young one in the nest, do eagles typically take their catch back to the nest to eat, or would they usually just take their catch back to the nest if there's someone there to feed?
Well, you know, if they're taking food back to the nest, it probably is a good sign they are feeding something, but they will eat in their nest as well. So that's not always a surefire way to make the assumption that they have young in the nest. But if you see them tearing and then kind of going back and forth to different spots in the nest, that usually is an indication that they are tearing off small pieces and feeding it to their young. And anyone who's watched any of the fabulous bald eagle cams has probably seen that behavior there. Despite their size, they're very gentle with their young. It's pretty amazing to watch.
Yeah, we do have an eagle cam in North Fort Myers here that's incredibly popular. I mean, worldwide popular, not just here.
Right.
They live streamed, I think, last year and had a couple eggs. One of the eggs didn't make it. The other one did. So, has anybody observed unusual things when they're watching an eagle nest, like out of the ordinary behaviors?
You know, there's all kinds of different things that go on, and I've worked with birds for a number of years, and one of the things I love about them is they always do something that surprises you, and you can never say never with anything bird-related. Oh, they'll never do that, because then they'll do it. And eagles are pretty interesting, so I have heard some fun stories, you know, about maybe a youngster from last year coming back to the nest or something of that type. Now, adults will tolerate their young from the previous year kind of visiting the nest early in the season, but as they get serious about nesting, they will typically drive the young off. So it would be highly unusual to see more than two adults at a nest at any time. But there was a report up in British Columbia recently of a bald eagle pair, quote-unquote, adopting a red-tailed hawk chick that showed up in their nest, and they raised it, and it ended up fledging along with their own young. So that was a highly unusual behavior. It has been noted a couple of times, you know, in journals, but it's very rare.
So red-tailed hawks are kind of not best friends with eagles in general anyway, so that's pretty unusual.
Right, and there are a variety of, you know, speculations about how the red-tailed hawk got there, and the most likely one is that probably the bald eagle had raided the red-tailed hawk nest and grabbed some of the young chicks from that nest to go back and feed their own, and for whatever reason, one of them survived that event and, you know, started begging like young birds do, and the desire to feed a mouth that's open is pretty strong and pretty ingrained in most birds, and so I think nature just kind of took over, and they saw that extra mouth open and said, let's put some food in that, and they kept feeding it, and it like I said, it survived to fledge, so it was a miracle.
That's just so unbelievable. So you mentioned that the eagle may have stolen the baby hawks in order to feed their young. The eagle's diet's said to be made up of 56% fish, 28% birds, 14% mammals, and other prey is 2%, and usually reptiles in Florida, because that 2% of other, because we have quite a few of those reptiles here. Would you say that the amount of fish consumed is also a little bit higher than average in Florida because we have so much water and more fish?
I don't know if I could say that 100% with certainty, but, you know, we do have a lot of water in Florida, and fish are a very popular food item for bald eagles, and they will even harass and steal fish from osprey, who are excellent hunters. So you'll see that sometimes they'll chase and take the fish away from the osprey. But, you know, bald eagles are truly opportunistic feeders. They will eat just about anything if they are hungry or they have mouths to feed in their nest. And they will actually eat on roadkill along with vultures. And unfortunately, a lot of them do get struck by vehicles. My office is actually at the Audubon Center for Birds of Prey, which has a raptor trauma clinic and treats over 800 birds of prey each year. And we get a number of bald eagles every year that have been struck by cars. So I always caution people to keep an eye out. I have Eagle Watch volunteers that will, if they see roadkill in the middle of the road, they will pull over when it's safe and pull that off to the side to make sure that nobody gets struck while they're eating it. They'll eat just about anything, but the main bird they will predate are coots. If you know that black fat bird that floats on waterways here in Florida, they are another popular food item for bald eagles.
What is it called?
It's called an American coot, C-O-O-T.
American coot. I am not familiar, but I'm definitely going to look it up as soon as the show's over.
You've probably seen them. If you look up the picture, they have these amazing webbed feet, which you don't often see because they're typically in the water, these large lobes on their feet, and they're nice and fat and a good source of food for birds. So
yeah, I'll have to look that up. We are talking about the Audubon Eagle Watch program in Florida. Do you have a question or a comment, or do you want to volunteer to observe nests? Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK on Facebook or at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So, you know, eagles have had their struggles over the years. They were on the brink of extinction in the contiguous United States in the late 20th century. But the populations, as you mentioned earlier, rebounded, and eagles were taken off of the endangered species list in 1995, and then they were downgraded to threatened, and then they were removed from the list of endangered or threatened wildlife in the lower 48 states in 2007. What happened to turn that survival rate around?
Well, it was, you know, just a bunch of people getting together and realizing, A, that there was a problem, that they were disappearing, and then taking steps to protect them. You know, putting them on the endangered species list meant that a number of things that had been occurring were no longer allowed. People used to shoot them, especially farmers often thought they were predating their livestock, which bald eagles can't really carry anything away that weighs more than 5 pounds or in that range, and so they're not going to go out and kill a cow or anything. But like I said, they do scavenge, so if they found something dead, you know, they are going to eat on it. So farmers were shooting them, which is now illegal. It's no longer illegal to shoot any bird of prey. There, you know, habitat loss is an ongoing issue, of course, but also DDT, which was the pesticide that was used widely for killing various insects back in the day. People didn't realize it was dangerous for the birds. It was causing them to lay soft-shelled eggs, and that meant their eggs were not hatching, and so that was causing a drastic drop in the population. And I believe that was banned in 92, and once that happened, it really helped the birds make a rebound. Once they stopped spraying the pesticide, it gave them a chance to kind of let natural processes catch up, and their productivity went back up, and they were able to rebound, which is great.
All right. Well, we're going to have to leave it there for now, but I want to thank our guest, Sean Lee Breeding, with the Florida Audubon Eagle Watch Program. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And if you're interested in more information about the volunteer program, check our website at wgcunews.org. Just click on the Gulf Coast Live tab. Within this story, you will find links to get the information that you need. Coming up, if you are unfamiliar with the world of podcasting, we have an introduction to it coming up next in an encore presentation that features some locally produced podcasts. That's up next.